Welcome back to the Deep Dive, your go-to place for turning complex information into clear, actionable insights. Today, we're plunging into the fascinating story of Epiroc AB.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one.
This isn't just another industrial company. It's a Swedish powerhouse operating right at the intersection of heavy machinery and, well, the bleeding edge of technology.
Exactly. That's the core tension, isn't it?
Right. Our mission today is to uncover what makes Epiroc such a compelling yet nuanced investment case. How does a company deeply rooted in the cyclical world of mining and construction manage to become a leader in automation, digitalization, and electrification?
That's the multi-billion dollar question, really.
We're going to pull apart its stable traditional business and its ambitious high-tech vision to help you understand its long-term value. Okay, let's unpack this.
And that core tension you just highlighted is precisely why Epiroc makes such a fantastic case study. You have this company fundamentally tied to the ups and downs of global commodities and infrastructure, yet it's also aggressively pursuing the future of critical industries. We'll be looking at how its strong aftermarket business provides a crucial safety net, but also how it's currently navigating some, near-term margin pressures from certain segments.
Like construction, you mean?
Exactly, like construction, which hasn't quite found its footing recently. Understanding Epiroc means not just understanding a company, but grasping the future trajectory of global mining and construction. And critically, how to value businesses that are dynamic, rapidly evolving, and frankly, straddling multiple worlds.
A blueprint for the modern industrial company, you could say.
I think that's a fair description.
Yeah, that's a powerful framing. And it all begins with a truly unique origin story. Here's where it gets really interesting. Epiroc has been described, quite paradoxically, as a 150-year-old startup.
Right.
Now, that sounds like an oxymoron. Most startups don't celebrate centennials. Could you unpack for us what that actually means and how it came to be?
It's definitely a fascinating paradox, and it captures their essence quite well, I think. So, Epiroc was officially established as an independent, publicly traded company in June of 2018. Pretty recent.
Okay, so quite new to the public markets then.
Exactly. Wow. This was a direct result of being spun off from the much larger and very well-known Swedish industrial conglomerate, Atlas Copco.
Ah, Atlas Copco. Okay, that name rings a bell.
Right. So while it only became an independent listed entity just a few years ago, it didn't just emerge from a garage. It inherited an incredible 150-year legacy.
Wow.
Yeah, tracing its roots back through Atlas Copco's long history in the mining and rock excavation sector. So you have this brand new, agile public company structure, but with this deep century-and-a-half-old foundation of expertise, customer relationships, and crucially, technological know-how.
A startup with deep pockets and a long history.
In a way, yeah. Best of both worlds, potentially.
So it wasn't just a corporate reshuffle then. This spin-off from Atlas Copco seems like a really deliberate strategic move, more than just, say, financial engineering.
Oh, absolutely.
What was the rationale behind taking such a long-established division and essentially turning it into a new company?
What's fascinating here is that this separation was indeed a profoundly strategic repositioning, not just moving boxes around on an org chart. Atlas Copco's board came to a clear realization. Their industrial-focused businesses, things like compressors and vacuum solutions, and their mining and civil engineering businesses were fundamentally serving different end markets.
Totally different customers, different cycles.
Exactly. They were driven by different demand cycles, had distinct operational requirements, and frankly, there were limited operational synergies between them.
Okay.
Trying to manage both under a single roof meant neither could truly optimize its strategy, its R&D, or its capital allocation. You end up compromising.
Makes sense. You can't serve two masters equally well, especially when they want different things.
Precisely. The spin-off allowed Epiroc to become a pure-play entity. This meant everything from top management down to R&D and capital spending could be solely focused on the unique needs and often long, volatile cycles of the mining and infrastructure industries.
So complete focus.
Complete focus. Imagine trying to innovate in cutting-edge automation for a deep underground mine while also balancing the R&D needs of, say, a factory air compressor division. It's a very different game, different timelines, different risks.
Right. The investment horizons alone must be vastly different.
Vastly. This dedicated focus for Epiroc means they can craft a tailored R&D strategy, align capital allocation with the long-term trends shaping mining, and make faster decisions. This agility is absolutely crucial for a company aiming to lead a technology-driven transformation in an industry that, despite its heavy-duty nature, is actually undergoing immense change.
So it let them be nimbler.
Exactly. This dedicated structure, in essence, empowered them to more aggressively pursue those capital-intensive long-term initiatives like automation and electrification. Initiatives which might have struggled for priority or funding within a more diversified conglomerate structure, it was really about unleashing that mining-focused potential.
That makes perfect sense. So the pure-play approach truly allowed them to sharpen their R&D focus and really lean into those specific long-term trends. Now let's dig into what this focused company actually looks like on the ground. Epiroc's operations are divided into two main segments: equipment and service, and tools and attachments.
Correct.
And looking at the recent figures, we've seen some pretty significant divergence in their performance, almost like two different companies under one roof sometimes.
That's a very accurate way to put it.
Could you break down what each segment does, and more importantly, how they're performing in the current market, especially given the distinct nature of the end markets you just mentioned?
Absolutely. We're truly looking at a tale of two markets within Epiroc's own portfolio right now. First, we have the equipment and service division. This is where you find their large, high-value mining equipment. Think massive drill rigs, loaders, trucks that operate deep underground or in vast open pit mines. Big ticket items.
The heavy iron.
The really heavy iron. And crucially, this division also includes all the associated service contracts, spare parts, and increasingly digital solutions for that equipment. It's not just selling the machine. This segment has been a real powerhouse lately, largely benefiting from robust activity in the mining sector globally.
Okay.
In the second quarter of 2025, for example, it reported a very healthy adjusted operating margin, or EBIT margin, of over 23%.
23%, that's quite strong for heavy equipment.
It really is. Fantastic margin. It also saw solid organic order growth of 2% in that same quarter, which is a direct reflection of that strong global mining demand we talked about. Mining companies are investing.
Okay, so equipment and services doing well, riding that mining wave. What about the other side?
Then we shift to the tools and attachments segment. This part of the business has greater exposure, as the name implies, to the global construction industry. Think hydraulic breakers for demolition, excavator attachments, things like that.
Right, smaller items, more tied to construction activity.
Exactly. And this is where the headwinds have been quite significant. In stark contrast to equipment and service, this segment posted a substantially lower adjusted EBIT margin, just under 13% in Q2 2025.
Wow, 13% versus 23%. That's a huge gap.
It is a very significant difference. While it technically also saw 2% organic order growth in that quarter, management explicitly noted that this was achieved despite weak underlying demand for construction attachments.
So the growth wasn't driven by a strong market.
Apparently not.
Right.
It suggests perhaps market share gains or specific project timing rather than broad market strength. Critically, its lower profitability has been dragging down the overall group's margins.
That margin difference really jumps out nearly double for mining equipment compared to construction attachments. That must create some real strategic tension internally, right? How does that bifurcation impact the company's overall profitability?
It absolutely does, and it illustrates the challenges of balancing a diverse portfolio, even within a supposedly focused pure-play company. These segments behave very differently, and this dynamic has actually been exacerbated by some recent strategic moves. For instance, the 2024 acquisition of Stanley Infrastructure, a major manufacturer of attachments.
Stanley Infrastructure, okay. Big name in tools.
Right. That acquisition was a key factor in diluting group-level operating margins. While strategically important for expanding their product range and attachments, Stanley Infrastructure came with profitability below Epiroc's group average.
Ah, so bringing in a lower margin business pulls down the average.
Precisely. If we look at the numbers, that specific acquisition had about a 1.4 percentage point dilutive impact on group margins in the fourth quarter of 2024. So yes, the strong mining business is thriving, hitting on all cylinders.
But the weaker construction market, plus this lower margin acquisition.
Exactly. It creates a constant balancing act that puts pressure on the overall financial picture, particularly on that group margin figure.
That makes sense. It's like bringing in a promising new player to the team who needs a bit of time and maybe some coaching to get up to the team's average performance level.
That's a good analogy. Integration takes time,
yeah.
And market conditions matter.
But amidst these divergent performances, there's another element that seems to provide a crucial layer of stability, almost a safety net for Epiroc's business model. Its aftermarket segment. You called it an aftermarket moat earlier, but isn't that just selling consumables? If miners are really hurting financially, won't they just defer maintenance? or maybe look for cheaper third-party parts? How robust is this moat, really?
That's a great question, and it gets right to the heart of what makes this aftermarket moat so powerful and resilient. It's much more than just consumables. This segment encompasses a vast array of activities: sophisticated services, critical spare parts, and yes, consumables like drill bits, lubricants, ground engaging tools, and so on.
So it's the whole package after the initial sale.
Exactly. And what's crucial here is that it provides a significant, consistent stream of recurring revenue. To give you context, in 2023, aftermarket activities accounted for roughly 68% of Epiroc's total orders received.
68%? That's huge.
It is. And in Q2 2025, it represented a robust 67% of total revenues. So this isn't some small side business. It's the dominant component of their top line. It dictates the rhythm of the company.
Okay, so it's big, but is it truly robust, as you say? Can miners really not cut back?
And to your point about robustness, think of it like this.
Yeah.
A mining company might delay buying a brand new multi-million-dollar drill rig if commodity prices dip or the economic outlook darkens. That's a massive capital expenditure they can potentially push out a year or two.
Makes sense. Big yeah. decision.
However, they absolutely cannot stop buying the drill bits, the lubricants, the critical spare parts, or getting essential service to keep their existing operations running. It's an operational necessity.
Ah, okay. The difference between buying new versus maintaining what you have.
Precisely. You still need to extract material, meet production targets. And if your existing fleet goes down due to lack of maintenance or parts, production grinds to a halt. Downtime is incredibly expensive in mining.
I can imagine. Millions lost per day, potentially.
Easily. Right? Miners operate highly capital-intensive equipment in extremely demanding environments. They often rely on OEM parts and service like Epiroc's to maintain warranties, ensure safety, and guarantee optimal performance and uptime. So while they might tighten their belts elsewhere, this operational necessity creates a durable baseline of demand for Epiroc's aftermarket offerings. It's linked more to equipment utilization rates, how much the machines are actually running, than to new equipment sales cycles.
So it's less about discretionary spending and more about essential operational upkeep. It's like your car. You might put off buying a new one, but you have to change the oil and replace the tires if you want to keep driving it.
That's a perfect analogy, exactly.
That helps smooth out the notorious volatility of the mining industry, then.
Absolutely. This large aftermarket component acts like a financial flywheel for Epiroc.
Yeah.
It helps smooth out the otherwise dramatic peaks and troughs of the new equipment cycle, leading to much more predictable and stable cash flows.
And more predictable cash flow is always good news for investors.
Always. This, in turn, translates into a higher quality of earnings compared to a pure equipment manufacturer that relies solely on those lumpy new machine sales. This truly addresses the resilience of the aftermarket business during economic downturns, providing a solid foundation even when new equipment orders might slow down significantly. It's a powerful competitive advantage that underpins the entire investment case and, frankly, allows them to invest more consistently through the cycles in things like R&D.
That makes perfect sense. A really strong foundation. Now, stepping back from the internal structure, Epiroc operates within a truly dynamic global landscape. Beyond their own internal operations and aftermarket strength, what are the major forces shaping the mining and construction industries right now that are either pushing or pulling Epiroc's trajectory?
The macro environment for Epiroc is a fascinating interplay of powerful and at times conflicting forces. It's definitely not simple. On the mining side, we're seeing a profound structural shift driven by the global energy transition. This isn't just a short-term trend. It's creating sustained long-term demand for critical minerals.
Copper, lithium, nickel, all that stuff for batteries and renewables.
Exactly. Copper for wiring, lithium, and nickel for batteries, all absolutely essential for electrification, electric vehicles, wind turbines, you name it. This provides a very significant and durable tailwind for mining activity globally. We're talking decades of potentially elevated demand for these materials.
About a secular trend, not just cyclical.
Precisely. And by extension, it's a tailwind for the advanced equipment and services that Epiroc provides to extract those minerals efficiently and safely. We're also observing a shift in capital expenditure trends among mining companies. It's not just about spending money, it's about how they're spending it.
Okay, how so?
They're moving beyond simple maintenance spending. Or just replacing old machines like for like. Their CapEx priorities are increasingly focused on expansion projects that integrate advanced technology.
So investing in upgrades, not just upkeep.
Exactly. The goal here is twofold: boosting productivity, getting more out with less, and enhancing safety, which is always paramount in mining. Think automation, remote operation, better data analysis.
So investing in smarter mining.
You got it. Think of it like a homeowner investing in smart home technology or solar panels. It's about long-term value, efficiency, sustainability, not just patching up a leaky roof. This shift plays directly into Epiroc's strengths, as their high-tech offerings are precisely what these companies are looking for. However, it's not all smooth sailing. Geopolitical tensions, for instance, are leading to some fragmentation of global supply chains. We're seeing a rise in resource nationalism in some countries.
Right. Countries wanting more control over their own minerals.
Yes. While these factors can disrupt operations and investment flows in some regions, they can also paradoxically stimulate investment in more politically stable mining jurisdictions, places like Australia, Canada, parts of the U.S. where companies like Epiroc often have a strong, established presence and good relationships.
Interesting. So challenges in one area might create opportunities elsewhere.
Potentially, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, in stark contrast to this generally robust mining outlook, the global construction market, as we touched on earlier, has remained persistently weak.
Still stuck in the mud, basically.
Pretty much. This weakness has a direct and negative impact on Epiroc's tools and attachments business, putting pressure on those margins we discussed. It's a cyclical downturn in construction that's lingered longer than many people expected.
So the mining side sounds like it has incredibly strong secular tailwinds, almost a super cycle for critical minerals while construction is still lagging. And it sounds like the demand in mining isn't just about more raw materials, but smarter, cleaner, safer extraction.
That's a crucial point about the nature of the demand shift. It's moving beyond sheer production volume, just digging more dirt, to a much stronger emphasis on value, efficiency, and sustainability.
What does that mean in practice?
It means miners need equipment that is more precise, less carbon intensive, hence the big push towards battery electric vehicles or BEVs, and capable of reducing the need for human operators in hazardous underground environments through automation and remote control. This structural shift plays directly to Epiroc's core strategic strengths in innovation, automation, and electrification. So Epiroc is positioned not just as a beneficiary of a cyclical upswing in commodity prices, but as a key enabler of a secular transformation within the entire industry. They're selling the picks and shovels for the new gold rush, but these picks and shovels are increasingly digital and electric.
Okay, that makes sense. So what does this all mean when we talk about competition? How does Epiroc stack up against its formidable competitors in this rapidly evolving landscape, particularly with this shift towards technology and sustainability? Who are they up against?
Right, the competitive landscape is key. The mining equipment market is moderately fragmented, with a few large global players dominating. How Epiroc competes really depends on the specific segment you're looking at. In the underground hard rock mining niche, think deep gold mines, copper mines, Epiroc, and its Swedish counterpart, Sandvik AB, are the undisputed market leaders. It's largely a two-horse race there.
Sandvik, another big Swedish name.
Exactly. They compete intensely on technology, on performance, reliability, and on their extensive global service networks. Both companies are pursuing very similar strategies, heavily centered on electrification, automation, and cultivating that strong aftermarket presence. It's a neck-and-neck race in that particular highly specialized high-tech area.
Okay, so head-to-head with Sandvik underground. What about surface mining? Open pits?
That's a different picture. In the surface mining market, Epiroc finds itself competing with much larger and more diversified players like the giants, Caterpillar Inc. and Komatsu Ltd.
Cat and Komatsu. Huge companies.
Huge. They possess vast global dealer networks and a commanding presence across large-scale earth-moving equipment haul trucks, big shovels, dozers. Here, Epiroc's strategy isn't really to go head-to-head across the board. It's more about technological disruption. They focus on advanced solutions, specifically things like fully autonomous and battery electric surface drill rigs, to carve out a distinct leadership position in the next generation of surface mining technology. They're not trying to outmuscle Cat on traditional diesel haul trucks, for instance.
So they pick their battles, focusing on tech leadership in specific niches, even on the surface.
Precisely. It's a focused disruption strategy rather than a broad frontal assault.
So it's not just a battle for market share today. It's really a battle for the future of mining technology. And that difference in business mix, more aftermarket, more tech focus, must also show up in their financial performance compared to those larger, more diversified players like Cat and Komatsu, right?
Absolutely. If we look at a peer comparison, it really highlights these distinct profiles and strategic choices. Epiroc and Sandvik consistently exhibit higher operating margins than Cat or Komatsu. And crucially, a significantly larger share of their revenue comes from that more stable, high-margin aftermarket segment. We said around 67% for Epiroc recently.
Right.
Compare that to Komatsu, which has an aftermarket share closer to 50-55%, or Caterpillar, which is around 37%.
Only 37% for Cat. Interesting.
Yeah, Caterpillar is obviously a massive, formidable competitor, and their aftermarket is huge in absolute terms. But as a percentage of their total business, it's smaller. Their business mix is just different, with more exposure to new equipment sales cycles, particularly in construction and energy and transportation. So investors often view Epiroc and Sandvik as higher quality, potentially more stable plays within the heavy equipment sector because of that larger recurring revenue stream from the aftermarket and their perceived leadership in mining technology. This generally supports their premium valuations compared to the broader machinery group.
Okay, that premium valuation makes sense in that context. Now, it's clear that technology isn't just a buzzword for Epiroc. It's absolutely core to their strategy to differentiate themselves and justify that premium. Let's dive deeper into that. How exactly are they leading the charge in automation, digitalization, and electrification? What tangible results, what real-world impact are we actually seeing from their innovation engine? Is it translating into real business?
Epiroc has indeed firmly established itself as a leader, arguably the leader in some areas. Across these three defining technology trends shaping modern mining, and the tangible results are becoming quite impressive. For example, by the end of 2024, their installed base of automated equipment machines operating without a driver surpassed an astounding 3,450 units globally.
Over 3,000 driverless machines. Wow.
Yes. And that was a significant 21% increase just year over year, demonstrating rapid adoption and, importantly, customer trust in their systems. These aren't experiments anymore. They're operational realities. This leadership is further evidenced by a really strong 30% growth in orders for their digital solutions in 2024 alone. That shows miners are actively buying into the software and data side of things.
So demand for the brains as well as the brawn.
Exactly. Yeah. And on the electrification front, they've seen a doubling in the operational use, the actual hours machines are running of their battery electric vehicle, or BEV, machines during that same period, 2024. The adoption curve is steepening.
Doubled in a year? That's significant momentum.
It is. At the heart of their digital strategy is what they brand as Sixth Sense, which is essentially an integrated digital ecosystem.
Sixth Sense. Okay. Catchy name.
Yeah. This system is designed to connect machines, other operational systems on the mine site, and personnel, enabling what they describe as a smart, safe, and seamless operation. It's about creating a unified, intelligent mining environment, breaking down data silos.
Now, I want to hone in on something you mentioned earlier that I found particularly fascinating. Their OEM-agnostic approach to automation. Could you elaborate on that? Does that mean they literally sell software that runs on, say, a Caterpillar drill rig? And if so, how does that relationship even work? Or does it mean they're trying to become the, like, operating system for the entire mining industry, regardless of the hardware brand?
You've hit on a critical and truly differentiating element of their strategy. And yes, your intuition is spot on. It's a potential game changer. Their OEM-agnostic approach to automation means Epiroc develops control systems and software that can be retrofitted onto mixed fleets.
Mixed fleets meaning different brands.
Exactly. It can be installed on equipment from any manufacturer, not just their own Epiroc-branded machines. Think about the implications of that.
That's huge.
It dramatically expands their addressable market far beyond customers who only buy Epiroc hardware. It allows them to sell high-margin technology solutions, the automation software, the control systems, to customers who might be operating predominantly equipment from Caterpillar, Komatsu, or other competing manufacturers.
So they can sell the brain even if they didn't sell the body.
Perfectly put. This isn't just a minor detail. It fundamentally transforms Epiroc's competitive position. It shifts them from being primarily a hardware supplier in those segments to becoming a potential software and solutions provider for the entire industry.
So they are aiming to be the operating system, or at least a key software layer.
That seems to be the ambition, yes. Regardless of the brand of the heavy machinery a mine is running, Epiroc wants to provide the intelligence, the automation layer. It's a paradigm shift in their business model, giving them access to a massive, high-margin market opportunity beyond their own equipment sales. It decouples their tech growth from their own hardware market share to some extent.
That's really clever and potentially very lucrative if they pull it off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in electrification, Epiroc's offering is similarly comprehensive. And this is the second area we should highlight. It extends well beyond just selling the battery-powered vehicles themselves.
Okay. What else is involved?
They provide the necessary charging infrastructure you need. Fast, reliable charging underground or on the surface. They offer sophisticated power management systems to optimize energy use. And they're even pioneering innovative commercial models like batteries as a service, or BaaS.
Batteries as a service, like software as a service.
Exactly the same concept. With BaaS, customers essentially lease the battery capacity, paying for usage rather than incurring the massive upfront capital cost of owning the battery asset outright. Batteries are a huge chunk of the cost of a BEV.
Right, that lowers the barrier to entry significantly for the miner.
Precisely. This full-scope approach vehicle, charging, power management, financing models, is strategically designed to de-risk and significantly accelerate the electrification journey for their customers. It makes it much easier for mines to transition away from diesel. It's a holistic solution, addressing the entire ecosystem around the electric machine, not just the machine itself.
That's brilliant. The OEM agnostic automation especially sounds like a real game changer, fundamentally altering their market potential. But let's bring it back to the bottom line. We talked about margin pressures. How has Epiroc's financial performance reflected these dual realities, the cyclical market pressures in construction versus these strategic, often capital-intensive tech investments?
Yeah, when we look at the numbers, Epiroc's financial performance truly tells this story of navigating both cyclical pressures and strategic investments. It's a bit of a mixed bag recently. On the revenue and orders front, they did achieve a record high revenue of SEK 63.6 billion. In 2024, which is roughly $6 billion USD. That was a healthy 5% increase over 2023, largely supported by those acquisitions we mentioned and continued strong mining demand.
Okay, record revenue in 24.
However, the more recent picture shows some moderation. In the second quarter of 2025, reported revenues actually decreased by 8% year over year.
Down 8%. That's a little concerning.
It does on the surface, but this headline number is a bit misleading. Organically stripping out currency effects and acquisitions growth was actually positive at 1%. The big culprit was a substantial 9% negative currency impact. The strong Swedish krona hurt them.
Ah, the joys of being a global exporter. Okay, so organic growth was flat to slightly positive.
Correct. Order intake showed a similar trend. Down 7% reported in Q2 2025, but up 2% organically. And importantly, their book-to-bill ratio was 101%.
Meaning orders coming in were slightly higher than revenues billed out.
Exactly, which indicates reasonable stability for near-term revenue. What's consistently clear from their reports and commentary is that high mining activity, particularly strong demand for automation and electrification solutions, stands in stark contrast to that persistent weakness in construction demand. The two worlds are moving at different speeds.
Okay, so revenue is holding up okay organically, driven by mining tech, despite construction weakness and currency headwinds. What about profits?
This brings us to profitability and margin analysis, which is really the core financial challenge Epiroc is grappling with right now. Epiroc has historically maintained industry-leading profitability, but their adjusted operating margin has compressed.
Compressed how much?
Declined from a very strong 21.7% in 2023 to 19.8% for the full year 2024, and it held steady around that level. At 19.7% in Q2 2025. Still very respectable margins, but definitely down from their peak.
And management has pointed fingers.
They've been quite transparent about the two primary drivers of this margin pressure. Firstly, there's that negative market mix we keep coming back to. The persistent weakness in the global construction industry directly impacts the lower margin tools and attachments segment. When volumes drop in a lower margin business, it creates negative operating leverage, further squeezing overall profitability.
Makes sense. Less revenue to cover fixed costs in that segment.
Exactly. Secondly, acquisition dilution has played a role. Epiroc's active M&A strategy, while strategically sound for building future capabilities, has introduced a near-term drag on margins.
Right, the Stanley Infrastructure deal specifically.
Yes, that was the big one recently.
Yeah.
As a large attachments business with profitability below Epiroc's group average, it had a notable 1.4 percentage point dilutive impact on group margins back in Q4 2024. That effect lingers.
It sounds like a delicate balancing act, almost like trying to accelerate into the tech future with one foot on the gas, mining tech, and the other lightly tapping the brake, construction weakness and M&A dilution.
That's a very apt description, yeah.
So where do they see the path to recovery for these margins? Is it just a waiting game for the construction market to finally turn around, or are they proactively addressing it through cost cuts or other measures?
That's precisely the challenge they face. They aren't just waiting. Epiroc is actively responding with efficiency measures, including consolidating manufacturing sites, optimizing their footprint, which should help streamline operations and reduce costs over time.
Okay, so some self-help involved.
Definitely. But the path back to their historical 21% plus margin profile likely depends on a combination of factors. Either a cyclical recovery in the construction market happens, which would improve their product mix and restore positive operating leverage in that segment. Or they need a significant acceleration in the growth of their highest margin technology and digital solutions offerings. If that high-tech part of the business grows fast enough, it could lift the group's overall margin profile, even if construction remains relatively stagnant. So it's likely a combination of operational efficiency, waiting for construction, and pushing hard on tech sales.
Got it. So multiple levers they need to pull. Now, despite these margin pressures you mentioned earlier, their cash flow looks strong.
Yes. Despite the margin headwinds, Epiroc continues to demonstrate robust cash flow generation and balance sheet strength, which is a critical underpinning for their strategy. Operating cash flow was incredibly strong in 2024, increasing by 47% year-over-year to over $9 billion. That's nearly $1 billion. That's significant cash generation.
47% growth in cash flow while margins were compressing. How does that work?
Good question. It often relates to working capital management, things like inventory control, and collecting receivables more efficiently. Strong cash flow isn't always perfectly correlated with margin percentage in the short term. They also maintain a healthy cash conversion rate, how much of their accounting profit turns into actual cash, which was 94% on a rolling 12-month basis as of Q2 2025. That's very solid.
So they're good at turning profits on paper into cash in the bank.
Very good. This consistent ability to convert accounting profits into real cash is a significant financial strength, especially for a company with high R&D spending needs and an active M&A appetite. Their balance sheet also remains solid. Net debt to EBITDA was only 0.82 at the end of Q2 2025. That's a comfortable leverage level, well within investment grade parameters. No red flags there.
So plenty of financial firepower.
Exactly. This financial strength is crucial. It underpins their ability to fund those strategic priorities, internal R&D, external M&A, and shareholder returns, all without compromising their financial stability. It gives them the flexibility to keep investing through the cycles, even when margins are temporarily squeezed.
It sounds like a company with its financial house fundamentally in order, even while facing some sector-specific headwinds. That strong cash flow and balance sheet are definitely critical for a company pushing so hard into new technologies. So with all that financial strength in mind, how is Epiroc strategically allocating its capital? Where are the priorities? Is it all going into tech, or are they still rewarding shareholders, especially given these margin pressures we've been discussing?
Capital allocation is a core area where Epiroc's long-term vision truly shines through, even when facing those near-term pressures. Their priorities are very clear. Innovation and R&D are unequivocally the top priority. In 2024, Epiroc invested a record amount of over $2 billion in R&D. That's a big number.
2 billion krona, okay. And as a percentage of sales.
To put that in perspective, R&D spending was running at 3.3% of revenue in Q2 2025. Which is a significant commitment for an industrial company of this type.
Higher than some peers.
Generally, yes, particularly focused on these future technologies. And this investment is not broadly distributed. It's sharply focused on the three core pillars of their technology strategy: automation, digitalization, and electrification. They're placing concentrated bets. This level of spending is a clear signal that Epiroc is competing on the basis of technological differentiation and the value they create for their customers, rather than simply trying to win on price. These investments are absolutely essential for developing the next generation of autonomous equipment, BEV platforms, and the digital solutions that are expected to drive the company's future growth and hopefully widen its competitive moat.
So R&D is priority number one. What's next?
Their M&A strategy is another key pillar, used strategically to accelerate their technological roadmap and strengthen their market position, often by acquiring specific capabilities they don't have in-house or want to develop faster. Between 2022 and 2024, Epiroc executed a series of targeted acquisitions. These included acquiring critical capabilities in automation and digitalization companies like Remote Control Technologies, RCT, ASI Mining for Autonomous Solutions, and Murnoch Electronic for Collision Avoidance Systems. These were tech buys.
Buying expertise and market access quickly.
Exactly. Other acquisitions like CR for ground engaging tools like shovel teeth and bucket lips, and the larger Stanley Infrastructure deal for attachments aimed to bolster their product offerings in core and adjacent markets, rounding out the portfolio. Now, while strategically compelling, an active M&A program, particularly with larger deals like Stanley Infrastructure, obviously carries integration risk. And as we've seen, it can be dilutive to group margins in the short term. That's the trade-off.
Risk versus reward, speed versus potential indigestion.
Right. But the strategic importance is paramount in their view. For example, their decision to acquire the remaining shares of ASI Mining in July 2024, they already owned a piece and then immediately announced the opening of a new surface mining automation center in Utah, dedicated to the former ASI team.
Doubling down on that acquisition.
Precisely. It clearly emphasizes their commitment to building out that OEM-agnostic autonomous solutions platform we talked about. This is about buying future capabilities and trying to solidify their leadership position in a critical growth area.
So they're really leaning into strategic acquisitions to fill technology gaps and accelerate their roadmap, even if it means some short-term margin pain. And what about rewarding shareholders directly? How do they balance that with these heavy investments in R&D and M&A?
Finally, in terms of shareholder returns, Epiroc has a policy designed to be both shareholder-friendly and sustainable through the industry's inherent cycles. It's quite prudent. They aim for a long-term, stable, and rising dividend with a target payout ratio of 50% of net profit. But critically, this payout ratio is measured over a business cycle, not necessarily every single year.
That's key. Averaged over the cycle.
Exactly. It's a prudent recognition of the earnings volatility inherent in their markets. This through-cycle approach allows the company to maintain a more stable dividend, avoiding sharp cuts during downturns, even if profits fluctuate significantly in a given year.
So consistency is the goal for the dividend. How did that play out recently?
For the 2024 fiscal year, they propose a dividend of SEK 3.80 per share. This is actually unchanged from the prior year, despite those record revenues we mentioned earlier. It's paid in two semi-annual installments.
Flat dividend despite record revenue. Interesting.
Yes. And the decision to maintain a flat dividend can certainly be interpreted as a conservative measure, likely reflecting management's caution in light of the prevailing margin pressures and perhaps an uncertain macroeconomic outlook at the time. They prioritized balance sheet strength and investment capacity.
Makes sense. What about share buybacks?
While they do engage in share repurchase programs, these are primarily technical in nature. They're mainly designed to cover obligations under long-term incentive plans for employees, like stock options. They're not currently using buybacks as a primary vehicle for returning capital to shareholders, unlike some other large industrial companies.
Okay, so the focus for capital return is the dividend, managed conservatively through the cycle.
Correct. The overall emphasis in capital allocation is clearly on investing for future growth through internal R&D and strategic M&A, supported by a stable but carefully managed dividend policy.
That's a very clear capital allocation strategy, prioritizing innovation and long-term positioning over short-term bumps in shareholder returns. Looking ahead then, building on that investment, where do you see the biggest growth opportunities for Epiroc to not just grow its business, but truly solidify its leadership in the coming years, especially given these aggressive tech bets they're making?
The biggest growth opportunities for Epiroc are undeniably tied to cementing and expanding its leadership position in the electrification and automation of mining operations. This isn't just about selling slightly better machines. It's about enabling a fundamental transformation of how the entire industry operates.
The scale of that opportunity must be huge.
It really is. The market for mining automation, for example, is forecast by various analysts to expand at a compound annual growth rate of approximately 7.2% between 2024 and 2029. That's strong, consistent growth, reaching a market size of over USD 5 billion by the end of that period.
5 billion just for automation tech and mining.
Exactly. Yeah. Similarly, the market for electric drive mining trucks alone is projected to grow significantly, potentially reaching over USD 800 million by 2031. These are significant, rapidly expanding markets where Epiroc is already a front runner with established products and growing order books. And we have concrete examples of this potential crystallizing. Look at Epiroc's landmark contract with Fortescue Metals Group in Australia.
Right. You mentioned that briefly before. Tell us more.
It's valued at SEK 2.2 billion. That's over $200 million USD over 5 years. This is a massive agreement for a complete fleet of fully autonomous and battery electric surface mining drill rigs for Fortescue's iron ore operations.
A whole fleet, fully autonomous and electric.
Yes. This isn't just a big sale. It's the largest single contract in Epiroc's entire 150-year history. And it serves as an incredibly powerful validation of their strategy and their technological capabilities in both BEV and autonomy for surface mining.
A massive proof point for the market.
Absolutely critical. This contract demonstrates that the industry's transition to autonomous and electric mining is not some distant theoretical concept. It's a present-day commercial reality being implemented at scale by major global miners. It provides Epiroc with a marquee reference case that they can now leverage to secure further large-scale, transformative contracts with other major mining operators around the world. It essentially de-risks the adoption for other potential customers who might have been sitting on the fence, if Fortescue can do it.
So that Fortescue contract sounds like a massive vote of confidence, not just for Epiroc, but for the entire future of autonomous and electric mining. Now, are these technologies being adopted primarily for environmental, social governance reasons, the ESG push, or are there significant hard-nosed economic benefits driving this shift as well? Because economics usually wins in the end.
That's a key question, and the answer is increasingly both. While early motivations for BEV adoption, particularly underground, certainly centered on ESG factors, things like eliminating harmful underground diesel particulate emissions for worker health and reducing overall carbon footprints.
Which are important goals, obviously.
Absolutely essential goals. But now, real-world operational data is coming in and demonstrating clear, compelling productivity and cost-saving advantages as well. The economics are starting to work, perhaps even better than initially expected.
Can you give examples?
Sure. There's a case study from Boliden's Kristineberg mine in Sweden, where a BEV trolley truck system using overhead power lines like a tram resulted in a 23% increase in productivity, tons moved per hour, and remarkably, a 25% reduction in maintenance costs compared to its diesel equivalent.
23% higher productivity and lower maintenance. That's huge.
It's a massive operational gain.
Yeah.
In another striking example, a BEV fleet implemented at a mine in South Africa demonstrated an 11% increase in tons moved per hour. And critically for deep underground mines, a 42% reduction in ventilation requirements.
42% less ventilation needed. Why is that so important?
Because ventilation to clear diesel fumes is one of the single biggest operating expenses for deep underground mines. It consumes enormous amounts of electricity. Reducing that need by nearly half has a direct, significant impact on operating costs.
Wow, okay, so the economic case is becoming undeniable.
Exactly. As these technologies transition from being perceived mainly as nice-to-have ESG initiatives to being seen as must-have tools for fundamentally enhancing productivity and lowering operating costs, the demand for Epiroc's advanced equipment is expected to become much more durable and less discretionary. It solidifies their market position because they're selling efficiency and sustainability, a powerful combination.
That makes a lot of sense. Better for the planet, better for the workers, and better for the bottom line. Hard to argue with that. Are there other big growth avenues besides the new equipment tech?
Yes. Beyond the exciting new equipment sales, a potentially equally substantial long-term growth vector for Epiroc is the continued expansion and deepening of its high-margin service and digital solutions business. Remember that 67% aftermarket share, there's still room to grow the value within that.
How so?
Well, orders for the company's digital solutions grew by that impressive 30% in 2024, indicating strong customer demand for technologies that enhance operational intelligence and connect the mine site. Epiroc is strategically focused on providing a suite of technology-agnostic solutions. Remember the OEM agnostic point that improves safety, productivity, and sustainability across the entire mine site, regardless of whose equipment is running.
What kind of solutions are we talking about?
These offerings range from establishing reliable, high-bandwidth, critical communication networks, underground essential for remote control and data transfer, to providing advanced data management platforms, predictive maintenance through fleet health monitoring, and sophisticated operational analytics to optimize workflows. It's the whole digital ecosystem. There's a significant opportunity here to increase the penetration of these digital services within Epiroc's vast existing customer base globally. Many customers who own Epiroc equipment might not yet be using their advanced digital or service offerings to the full potential.
So upselling and cross-selling into the installed base?
Precisely. By embedding its software and technology deeper into customers' core operational workflows, Epiroc can create stickier long-term relationships, significantly increase switching costs, making it harder for customers to leave and generate a growing stream of high-margin recurring revenue. This further enhances the quality and predictability of the company's earnings profile over time. It's essentially applying a software-as-a-service, SaaS, or solutions-based model to the traditionally hardware-focused world of heavy industry.
Those are truly exciting opportunities, especially when you consider the dual benefits of economic efficiency and environmental responsibility driving the tech option, plus the recurring revenue potential of the digital services. But as we always say, no investment is without risk. As we look at Epiroc's promising future, what are the potential pitfalls or speed bumps on the road ahead? And how should we, as investors, think about accurately valuing a company that is navigating these powerful, sometimes conflicting forces of cyclicality and innovation?
That's the crucial counterpoint, because even with strong secular tailwinds and technological leadership, significant risks persist. It's essential to keep these front of mind. The first category is inevitably macroeconomic and cyclical risks. Epiroc has inherent exposure to the cyclical nature of global mining and construction. Commodity price volatility directly impacts mining companies' willingness and ability to spend on new capex.
Even with the energy transition tailwind.
Even with that. While the long-term trend is positive, short-term commodity price swings can absolutely cause miners to pause or defer projects. And while the aftermarket business provides that significant cushion, it's not entirely immune. A severe, prolonged downturn could eventually reduce the active installed base of equipment being used, thereby lowering demand for services and consumables over time.
So what should investors watch?
Important indicators to monitor here include global manufacturing PMIs, those purchasing managers' indexes that act as health checks for the industrial economy, key commodity prices, copper, gold, iron ore, etc., and of course, the publicly announced CapEx plans and budgets of the major mining corporations. Are they spending or cutting back? Then there are competitive and execution risks. Epiroc operates in a highly competitive environment. We mentioned Sandvik, Caterpillar, and Komatsu. They are not standing still. All are making substantial investments in their own automation and electrification programs.
The tech race is heating up.
Absolutely. The risk here is always that a rival develops a superior leapfrogging technology that erodes Epiroc's current advantage, or perhaps achieves similar results at a lower cost. Furthermore, there are significant execution risks associated with the widespread adoption of BEVs and autonomous systems by the mining industry itself.
What kind of execution risks?
These technologies face real-world hurdles for the miners. Very high upfront costs compared to diesel. Ongoing questions about battery limitations like range, degradation, and charging times in harsh conditions. And crucially, the need for significant and costly mine site infrastructure, upgrades, power grids, communication networks, charging stations.
So adoption might be slower or bumpier than hoped.
Exactly. Slower than anticipated adoption by the mining industry would definitely delay Epiroc's growth projections in these key areas and dilute the expected returns on their substantial R&D investments. It requires both Epiroc and its customers to execute well. Finally, we have plain old operational risks. As a complex global manufacturer of intricate supply chains scanning the world, Epiroc is exposed to disruptions. Think shipping delays, component shortages, and input cost inflation for things like raw materials, steel, copper, critical components, and skilled labor.
Things that affect any manufacturer.
Right. While some of those intense pressures have moderated from their post-pandemic peaks, ongoing geopolitical fragmentation, trade tensions, and regional conflicts present persistent risks to the stability and cost-effectiveness of global supply chains. An unexpected disruption could impact production or costs.
Okay, so plenty to watch out for. Cycles, competition, execution, operations. Now, given all this, on one hand, Epiroc is a cutting-edge tech leader with strong secular tailwinds. On the other, it's still subject to the unpredictable tides of heavy industry, competition, and global supply chains. This raises that important question again. How do we accurately assess the long-term value against these intertwined forces of cyclicality and innovation? Traditional valuation metrics like PE can be really tricky for a company like this, can't they?
You're absolutely right. This is where investment analysis gets particularly nuanced and frankly challenging for companies like Epiroc. The core insight here is that you really need to be cautious, maybe even throw out, the simplistic backward-looking price-to-earnings PE ratio as your primary valuation tool.
Why is PE so misleading here?
Because using standard trailing or even forward PE ratios for highly cyclical companies can be incredibly deceptive. A PE ratio will often appear deceptively low at the peak of an economic cycle when earnings are temporarily inflated, making the stock look cheap when it might actually be expensive relative to its sustainable earning power.
The peak earnings trap.
Exactly. And conversely, the PE ratio can appear excessively high at the bottom of a cycle when earnings are depressed, making the stock look expensive when it might actually be cheap relative to its recovery potential. Epiroc's current normalized PE of around 25 and its price-to-sales ratio of about 3.7 need very careful interpretation within this cyclical context. They aren't straightforward signals.
Okay, so PE is unreliable. What about comparing it to peers?
Looking at peer group valuation is useful, but also requires care. Epiroc typically trades at a premium higher valuation multiples compared to peers like Caterpillar and Komatsu on metrics like price to sales and sometimes PE or EBITDA.
And we said that premium is because of...
Generally, it's justified by its superior, more stable operating margin profile, that significantly higher proportion of recurring aftermarket revenue, and its perceived leadership position in mining technology, particularly automation and electrification. The key analytical question for an investor, though, is whether this current premium fully and fairly reflects these advantages, or perhaps over-reflects them. Is the market already pricing in all that future tech upside? If so, it might present a risk of multiple contraction if the company's execution falters, competition intensifies, or its margin profile deteriorates further. You constantly have to assess if the premium is deserved.
Makes sense. So if PE is tricky and peer comparison needs context, what about intrinsic value methods like DCF?
For estimating intrinsic value using a discounted cash flow DCF analysis, which is really a cornerstone of fundamental valuation, standard plug-and-play models can also be flawed if applied blindly to cyclical companies. The correct approach requires specific adjustments for cyclicality.
What kind of adjustments?
First, you absolutely need to think through the cycle. This means using normalized or through-cycle earnings and cash flows as your baseline for projections, not just last year's numbers or next year's potentially rosy forecast.
How do you normalize?
You typically calculate the company's average financial performance, average margins, average cash conversion over a full business cycle, which for mining might be 5, 7, or even 10 years, to capture both the ups and downs. This gives you a much more realistic foundation for your forecasts than just using recent results, which could be at a peak or a trough. Second, scenario analysis is absolutely crucial given the inherent uncertainty in commodity cycles and the pace of technology adoption. You shouldn't rely on a single base case.
What kind of scenarios?
You should incorporate multiple probability-weighted scenarios, for example, a sustained mining upswing scenario with strong growth, a global cyclical downturn scenario with negative growth, and perhaps a rapid technology adoption scenario where tech revenues accelerate faster than expected. This helps you quantify a plausible range of outcomes, because this is definitely not a simple linear growth story. And finally, for the terminal value, which often accounts for a large portion of the calculated DCF value, your assumptions must be conservative and consistent with normalization, meaning you should typically use a perpetual growth rate that's in line with, or even below, long-term global GDP growth. And if you use an exit multiple approach for the terminal value, ensure that multiple is a normalized mid-cycle multiple, not one that's inflated or depressed by current market sentiment or peak trough conditions. Ultimately, the valuation of a company like Epiroc is less about precisely forecasting the next quarter's earnings number and much more about forming a well-reasoned long-term view on the sustainable profitability of the business through its cycles and understanding the durable value created by its technological leadership and its aftermarket-driven competitive advantages. It requires integrating both cyclical adjustments for the core business and scenario-based forecasts for the new transformative technologies.
That was quite a deep dive into Epiroc AB. Really comprehensive. We've seen a company deftly navigating the inherent volatility of heavy industry while simultaneously and aggressively pursuing a leadership role in the future of mining. We've covered its unique 150-year-old startup origins, explored its two distinct business segments and their somewhat divergent performance recently. We understood the stabilizing power and the sheer size of its aftermarket moat.
That aftermarket piece is so critical to their story.
Absolutely. We also looked at its relentless focus on automation, digitalization, and electrification, all while balancing the financial realities of near-term margin pressure against strong underlying cash flow and a very clear forward-looking capital allocation strategy. And of course, we've weighed the nuanced risks and the critical valuation considerations needed for such a dynamic, cyclical, yet innovative business.
Epiroc truly stands out, I think, not just as an equipment manufacturer anymore, but increasingly as a critical technology and solutions provider for the future of the mining and infrastructure industries. The insights from this deep dive really highlight the complexities, but also the potential rewards of looking beyond the near-term headlines and quarterly noise to try and see the durable value creation potential that can be rooted in technological moats and resilient business models like their aftermarket. It's a company betting big on a fundamental transformation of its core industry, and it's doing so with, you know, a century and a half of accumulated expertise and customer relationships behind it. That's a potent combination.
Indeed. And it makes me think, just as a final provocative thought for our listeners, Considering Epiroc's clear commitment to that OEM-agnostic automation strategy and its innovative batteries-as-a-service model, how might their business model continue to evolve even further? Could these aspects push them even deeper into the realm of becoming essentially a pure-play technology and solutions provider, fundamentally changing how we even define a mining equipment company in the future? Might we eventually see the software and services revenue dwarf the hardware revenue? What aspects of their story most intrigued you? Something to ponder. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Epiroc. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.